The second case set for argument this morning is in the matter of the zoning application or change of zoning application by M. Rose Development versus Turner County Board of Commissioners. Ron Parsons Jr. is arguing on behalf of Turner County. Caitlin Hoffman is also present on behalf of the county. Andrew Hurd is present, will be arguing on behalf of M. Rose Development. Each side will have 20 minutes for initial arguments, and then Mr. Parsons, you'll have a 10-minute rebuttal. You can proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court and my friend, Mr. Hurd, at counsel's table. My name is Ron Parsons. I'm here with Turner County State's Attorney, Caitlin Hoffman. This is a case about Swan Lake. It has nothing to do with the famous Russian ballet, of course, and one is much more likely to see a Canadian goose or two on the waters than a swan. It's called Swan Lake because of its topography. At the time it was named, at least, it was shaped like a swan. It's a very small and shallow lake. When you stand at the point of its southern shore where there's residential developments, you can almost see into the houses of the lake house, the lake houses on the in the housing development on the other shore. It's the only lake to speak of in Turner County. And therefore, it's a precious and limited natural and recreational resource for Turner County. And because of that, its shorelines are already fairly congested and well-developed. If you start from the northeast, where you would say the head and the neck of the swan are, there's a Swan Lake Christian camp, a small Christian camp. Then you've got residential development, several rows deep or lots deep, all across the top. There's a city park. You've got the Shore Store on the western side. Then down here, you've got some GFP land that's kind of marshy. There's GFP access. Then you've got another big, several lots deep residential development. And then you've got a strip of farmland before you get back to the Christian camp that is corn and beans, been farmland, prime agricultural farmland. And that is the subject of this appeal, that land, that western part of the shore, or eastern, excuse me, part of the shore. The appellees in this case are a real estate agent and his development company from Minnehaha County named M. Rose. And M. Rose had done market studies and housing studies of the commercial and housing, the residential infrastructure developments around Lake Madison and Kampeska and other watertown lakes, and he thought, maybe I'll bring a version of that to Swan Lake. That was the idea. He struck up a deal with Christy Stewart, who's the landowner. She's not a party to this appeal, but she now owns the farmland that was owned by her family going back that stretched from the sunrise to the eastern shore of Swan Lake. And the plan was to fill the shore with residential development and light commercial development. Under Turner County's comprehensive plan and its revised ordinance, that farmland was zoned A1 agricultural. It's bountiful farmland. It's some of the best crops in that part of the state. Under the density regulations for A1 agricultural land, the landowner can build up to 4 houses on the lake next to each other that have lots that stretch back. But the proposed residential development to fill the shoreline with houses could not be built if it's zoned A1 agricultural. M. Rose sought to have the Turner County Board of County Commissioners rezone the land from A1 agricultural to LR Lake Residential. There's a process for considering those proposals as ordinances under the county regulations. It was brought before the board. There was public input. There was substantial public opposition based on congestion, density, infrastructure, incompatibility with the agricultural character and use of the land. That's the only part of the lake that really stretches out into prime farmland. The first vote was a tie, 2-2, which means the ordinance failed, but the county felt it proper to bring it back when they had the full board there And so another hearing was held, another vote was held, and there the ordinance then was denied again, 3-2.
Council, when you said there was considerable opposition and you mentioned on the various topics, how, from what part of the record do we glean that?
Only from the descriptions of that in the hearing from the circuit court. The hearings were not recorded. There weren't detailed minutes of the hearings, but I think the parties in their briefing and in their arguments at the evidentiary hearing before the court on the petition for judicial review described the opposition.
Mr. Schumacher talked about it at length, rapid-firing questions at him, that sort of testimony.
Yes.
He referenced it in his direct examination, I think.
Yes.
So before it went in front of the county commission, the planning commission recommended approval. Is that correct?
Yeah, the planning, I don't know, so it's the commission, the planning entity,
yeah,
recommended approval.
And there's a zoning administrator. Did the zoning administrator make any recommendation? Is there anything in the record that indicates what their staff's recommendation was?
No, I don't think so, other than the original administrative recommendation. But the Turner County, as I understand it, sits as both the zoning commission, the same board, and then the appeal. So they are the appellate body as well, which is permissible under.
So we don't have any staff input on, at least in the record.
At least in the record. I think that's true. Yes.
So the outcome of this case really turns in large part on the standard of review that we apply. Could you just briefly talk about what you think the appropriate standard of review, because there's some difference of opinion.
Yes, and that's an issue that we've raised. The statutes, there is lingering confusion in many cases because the statutes still reference a blanket de novo review for appeals from decisions by counties and other entities. I think it's SCCL 7829. This court, in a series of cases, the Troy Township case, Carmody case, the McLean case, has said that violates the separation of powers when you're talking about a discretionary or an administrative decision, a legislative decision by a board. Those are decisions that are entrusted to our local boards, and it would violate the separation of powers for the court to come in and make executive or legislative decisions for the county on that level. The only way a de novo review is permissible is when the decision itself was quasi-judicial, meaning that is something that is naturally something a court would decide that could be brought before a court in the first instance, even. This clearly was not that. And so this was just should the ordinance be amended? Should we adopt an amendment to our ordinances to change this zoning? That's a purely, purely legislative decision.
And the amendment, I'm sorry to interrupt, but the amendment that you're describing would be an amendment in the sense that it would change the maps, right?
Yes.
I mean, so, and the maps, I don't see them in the record, but in any event, there's really no functional difference between amending the zoning ordinance in that respect and, in a colloquial sense, granting the request to rezone. Those are sort of the same sort of determination.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. They're both legislative decisions, policy decisions made by the board.
Can I ask a question about that standard of review? And I know that you've addressed some in your brief some of the confusion about how this was referred to. I'm wondering, though, if that's so much a question that determines the disposition in the case, or whether resolving that question would determine the remand if we get to that point. And I wondered if maybe part of the confusion isn't about the word de novo, which for our group here is a Latin word that means new. You decide something new. It's de novo. So the standard in, and I think it's 7830, talks about each cause being heard and decided or determined de novo. In other statutes, like the township statute, it says trial de novo or something like that. That means that we have a new determination, start to finish. Our de novo review is different. Our de novo review means there's no deference. But with a trial de novo, we would have You would completely try the factual case brand new. It seems like the first error that you identify is the de novo review one. The court applied the ordinances wrong. Has nothing to do with Troy Township, just read them wrong. Am I right on that?
Yeah, I think so, Your Honor. And part of it is that the trial court didn't really adopt what Amrose was arguing. Amrose had arguments that fit better into the arbitrariness standard before the court. The circuit court did not adopt those arguments or the evidence supporting those arguments and its findings. What the circuit court did was apply the ordinances themselves and say that essentially under the ordinances, Amrose is entitled as a matter of law to have this rezoned as Lake Residential because it's next to a lake. That really wasn't what Amrose had argued, to be fair. And that was wrong, incorrect as a matter of law, as we've suggested. This court reviews that determination de novo, and we'll hear from Mr. Hurd in a moment, but my reading of the briefs is Amrose doesn't really disagree that that was a legally erroneous decision.
If that's accurate, and then we still have to resolve and confront this issue to determine what happens on remand. So
that's
that's where I may have interjected. Go ahead, please.
No, that's perfect segue. That's where this all leads us. Your Honor, the correct standard is the arbitrariness standard under this court's cases. Has to be, it's akin to abuse of discretion, a manifest abuse of discretion. There was some kind of fraud or unreasonableness, complete unreasonableness. So that's the standard, and that's the standard they tried to meet originally, and I would suggest failed.
This would be a decision more in the nature of a policy decision, either administrative, executive-like, or legislative, rather than a determination of a dispute between two parties using established principles, something akin to what we would see as an original action in a trial court.
Yes. We suggest, in effect, Amrose was asking the circuit court to substitute its judgment for that of the board. Now, there were two board members that would have agreed with Amrose, but three did not, and that's how these disputes are resolved.
If we agree with your agree that the proper standard of review was a review for arbitrariness, there was a record made, does this need to be remanded at all?
No, I don't think so, Your Honor. They had their opportunity to present their case for arbitrariness. They did, and it was not adopted by the circuit court. So I would suggest...
No, go ahead, please.
I would suggest that this court should reverse and remand with instructions to deny the petition. They've had their hearing.
What, if anything, do we do about the lingering hearsay argument that arguably could implicate, I suppose, something in an arbitrariness determination? It was never resolved. The testimony from Mr. Ciampa, the plumber, or the hearsay testimony attributed to Commissioner Ciampa, who's also county commissioner and was a no vote on this 3-2 decision. There's a hearsay argument. Court initially sustains it, then circles back and kind of leaves it as a bit of a loose end, and then it doesn't get resolved, and then here we are. What do we do with that? Do we do anything with it?
Well, I think what we do with it is what we would ask the court to do is to reverse and remand with instructions to deny the petition, because that case was made to the circuit court and it did not adopt it at all. Did not enter any findings that would support that, even though it was asked to. Was in effect a denial.
But that was because it made what you believe was the erroneous legal ruling to start with. It resolved the case there. It didn't reach those issues, neither positive nor negative.
I think that's fair. It did not do it either positively or negatively, although it did reject our findings, our proposed findings as well, which I put in the record. Those were deemed rejected, not adopted, and that would have definitively resolved it. So,
if we accept your argument and correct what you claim is an error in the interpretation of the 2008 revised Turner County Zoning Ordinance, then that then that's the result, disposition. And then what happens next is then that hearsay question becomes, comes into sharper focus. And as Justice Myron said, I don't know if the court ever really truly got to that.
Yeah, and the court, it's kind of unclear whether the court allowed that testimony as an offer of proof or just allowed it in any event. I think it basically just decided to allow it in any event because it was heard, and it's a court trial anyway. But that testimony in and of itself, our argument is, if you even accept that as truthful, is such a stray and innocuous comment that there's no way that, in our opinion, that that comment, in the circumstances it was made, could lead any reasonable fact finder or court to conclude that that meant that the entire board's decision was therefore arbitrary and unreasonable.
I'll ask Mr. Hurd this question too, and he may just furnish it, but is there other evidence in the record that really bears upon the arbitrariness standard? Mr. Schumacher, testifies that this is his, he's conceived of this idea, he's done everything to a T. There's testimony about the land and the ability to use it as someone wants to. There's testimony about the Mr. Ciampa. But is there testimony that really bears upon in the record this arbitrariness standard outside of maybe the Plummer testimony?
No, and that's why this case should just simply be remanded with instructions to not deny. They had the opportunity to present whatever evidence there was and could not come up with any evidence other than a stray remark by the Plummer city councilman who said, well, her dad might not have wanted that to be a housing development.
Well, there is another claim out there on arbitrariness that it was just sort of decided in a vacuum, just nay. No staff recommendations, no information, no rationale set for that. And so the only thing we really have is you have a lot of opposition, people coming in saying, oh, this is a really bad idea, I don't like the idea, so don't do it. And we've got, and I can't cite you the case, but we've got some case law in our certiorari cases, which is a little bit different standard, but very deferential like this, where we suggest, if a board makes a decision, just what's popular, that may be subject to certiorari review and may be reversible. Is this the same situation in terms of arbitrariness where they're just looking at, hey, there's a whole bunch of people over here that don't like this idea. We're not even going to look at whether this is a good idea, and we're just going to deny it.
I don't think so, Your Honor, because that would mean that if the unpopularity of an idea would give it legal teeth. The more unpopular it is, the more likely as you can have a court impose it. There was staff development and addressing of this issue. I didn't mean to say there wasn't. The record doesn't reflect the paperwork that went into this, but this was considered by the Planning Commission, and there was a recommendation, and there was support for that. I mean, all the documents were looked at. There were documents, plans, and proposals. All this was submitted to the commission and submitted to the zoning board. It's just not all in the record. And there were two hearings on this.
Mr. Parsons, if I could. So I want to follow up on a couple of things that I see in the trial court record about discovery and the state of the record. And maybe your argument is it is what it is and the die is cast on that. But there was some, at various points, references to from the county that, hey, you can't have certain testimony, you can't have this testimony, it needs to be subject to discovery. And I look at that a couple of different ways, but one of the ways I wondered about when I thought about that and read it was, is this the county arguing that in the absence of a transcript, in the absence of a recording, it is the obligation of the appealing party to sort of figure out arbitrariness with some sort of evidence, and that's their obligation. They may not have to do it through discovery, but that and it seems to be what some of those arguments were, or those objections and arguments were driving at.
Well, I think the case law is pretty clear that the presumption is that these boards act with integrity. And so, yeah, you have to come forward with some sort of evidence that they didn't. I think the prime example of that is the Troy Township case, where you have three different situations where townships had vacated roads. In two of those situations, there was no evidence that the board acted improperly, and so under the arbitrariness standard, those decisions were affirmed. In the third, you had direct evidence that they didn't follow the statute, and so that decision was reversed.
So here's the part that's troubling about that for me, performing this role, is essentially I think of the arbitrary capricious standard as saying when a board is making a decision that is a legislative type function, a policy making decision, our role is simply to look and make sure they did their job as a legislative body. Not whether we agree with their decision or whether their decision was correct, but just essentially a proper functioning. And the argument that we have here, or the situation that we have here, is there's just a yes and no. We don't have anything to see, aside from the fact that we know that they did some sort of process. We don't know anything about the process. And it's almost encouraging commissions to leave a blank record because of the presumption that you just argued about. So can we properly perform the function, as limited as it is, when we have nothing to review?
I think you can, because you do have an evidentiary hearing to review. And if there was evidence of that, it would have been presented and has been presented in many cases. But there was no evidence to present because there was no evidence because we would suggest they did not act improperly. I think you have to presume, unless there's going to be a rule that every agency has to record every meeting they have and set forth all the reasons for everything they did on all the hundreds of thousands of decisions they make, that's where we're left. And I think that's what the statutes contemplate, and that's what this Court's decisions contemplate.
Thank you, Mr. Parsons. Mr. Hurd, you can proceed with your argument.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. My name is Drew Hurd, and I represent the Appalese, Emrose Development Co., and Jason Schumacher. While there are some procedural issues with how the Circuit Court ruled on this, ultimately this is a case about whether a Board of Adjustment can deny a petition to rezone based on a belief about what the prior owner of that land may or may not have wanted.
Well, we don't really get to that, and maybe. Right away. Maybe we eventually get to that. But is Mr. Parsons correct in the way he read your brief and in that there's really no argument from Emrose that the court correctly applied the 2008 zoning ordinance?
I think we have to concede that, Justice Salter.
Okay.
I think that
thank you.
Chavez, Troy Township, the Surratt cases, the Circuit Court's ultimate decision, I think it violates the separation of powers issues, and it also just runs contrary to the precedent that's been decided since 2015-ish. That said, he's still looking, and this isn't something for the court, it's something for the legislature, but there is still a statute out there, 7830, which requires de novo review of these things.
And requires heard and determined de novo, so you can have a brand new trial.
Sure. And yeah, and my understanding is there's not supposed to be deference given to findings from the board. Now, of course, in this case, as the justice has mentioned, there are no findings.
For quasi-judicial decisions, is this one of those, or is this an administrative or legislative decision?
Sure. So the de novo review only applies in cases of quasi-judicial decisions. I do not believe, I think the county is right, that in changing, if Emrose's relief was to be granted, it would require the zoning maps to be changed, and the zoning maps are incorporated by reference into the ordinances. So I think I have to concede that it's a legislative function that the board was performing at the time, and I think the arbitrariness standard is correct.
And to be clear then, okay, it seems like then, because when I read the Circuit Court's decision, it seemed like the Circuit Court either thought that this land already was Lake Residential or should be Lake Residential with nothing else that needed to be done. Sort of this idea that because it's along a lake, it's necessarily Lake Residential, or it has to be, and there's just no other way to look at it. That legal determination, is that what you're saying? You know, we agree that wasn't a correct interpretation of the ordinances.
Right, because I think ultimately what the result would be if the circuit court's ultimate decision is accepted is that Judge Kanoff will have amended their ordinances by his ruling.
So with those concessions made, tell me, how do we get to sustaining the verdict in favor of your client?
Well, so the first argument that we made in our brief was about waiver. Upon further review, though, and frankly, I think I'm going to be exercising my duty of candor to the court quite a bit during this, I think ultimately, even if that argument's accepted, there's a separation of powers issue where this court would just be doing the same thing, and there would be this weird exception to the separation of powers issue. I think there's a constitutional issue either way.
So what I'm hearing you say, Mr. Hurd, is that the decision needs to be reversed. It's just a question of whether we send it back to determine arbitrariness or whether we decide as a matter of law it wasn't arbitrary and the case is over.
That's right, Chief Justice. I think that either way this case needs to get remanded. I think the appropriate way to do it is to remand it straight to the board after finding that their decision was arbitrary. The only evidence in the record of the commissioner's decision and why they came to that decision, Jason Schumacher testified that they told him they didn't have to give him a reason. Christy Stewart testified that they told her they did not have to give her a reason. And Doug Behrens testified that Commissioner Ciampa told him that the reason that he did not vote in favor of the application was because Christy Stewart, who's one of the owners of Emrose, her father, who used to own the land, would not have wanted to see it get
developed. So let's deal with the first two. Do they have to give him a reason? And where's the source of that requirement?
So I think that the Troy Township case says that they have to give them a reason. Troy Township says that the board must examine the relevant data and articulate a satisfactory explanation for its action. There is no explanation whatsoever from the appellant, from the board itself, as to why it made its decision. There's been all of these post hoc articulations looking at the comprehensive plan. Maybe this is why, but they're all presumptions. There's no record testimony from any of the commissioners that was why they made their decision. There's no minutes the concerns from the people who lived around the lake were the basis for the commissioner's decision. I mean, the only thing we have in terms of record testimony is a statement from one of the commissioners saying that he did it because a now-deceased individual who used to own the land wouldn't have wanted to see it get rezoned. And I don't think that the court can just consider this some stray comment or some, you know, offhand remark. These commissioners are normal people. After they make their determinations in their legislative forum, they go home and interact with individuals. I mean, let's assume, and this is certainly not the facts of this case, but let's assume one of the commissioners had gone home and told a group of friends that the reason that he didn't do it was because of the applicant's race or because of the applicant's gender. I mean, that would certainly be relevant testimony that a circuit court should consider in when determining whether the action was arbitrary.
So go ahead.
Do the rules of evidence apply at the evidentiary hearings?
Right, yeah.
How is that not a hearsay statement?
I think that ultimately the court allowed it in because Tony Ciampa is a party opponent.
It didn't appear the court ruled on that objection. The court... it was made, my recollection, and the court said it would take that into consideration and decide whether or not to accept that statement.
My recollection of the record is that is how he started during Jason Schumacher's testimony. I believe during either Christy Stewart's or Doug Behrens' testimony, Judge Kanoff jumped back in and made the statement something to the effect of considering this as a party opponent statement or representative statement under 1919, I think it's 802D. Whether or not he considered those things in its decision, it is not in the findings of facts, conclusions of law, or the ultimate judgment. But I think to Justice Myron's point, I think the record's pretty clear that Judge Kanoff didn't even think that there was a discretion to be abused in this case. He essentially ruled because residential housing is a permitted use in a lake residential district, and this is on a lake, then there's no discretion whatsoever to deny their petition.
So, and I want to step back for a minute, because you talked about Troy Township and what you think that stands for with regard to the need to express a reason for a decision or something in that regard. But
sure.
Troy Township was citing some cases, some U.S. Supreme Court cases that was relating to the administrative procedural rules, where there are certain types of agency findings that require findings to be made. So it doesn't appear that we have anything like that when it relates to some of these county local board decisions. So where is there anything that requires them, even though, yes, it would make it easier to do the review after the fact, that requires them to do that?
Sure. Justice Savini, I think that SDCL 7829 does require them to do that. And what SDCL 7829 requires is that upon someone who applies for some sort of zoning determination, wants to appeal it, they have to pay a bond and they have to pay specific fees. And then at that point, the county auditor shall make out a complete transcript of the proceedings of the board relating to the matter and its decision. So while there isn't a statute which, ideally there would be a statute before that, right, which says that they do have to report it somehow. But in order to actually perform its mandatory function under 7829, there must be something for the county auditor to transcribe. And so when the board does nothing to create a transcript, and quite frankly, I don't, 7829 appears to require it, and I don't know that there's any reasonable basis not to record your proceedings.
What about 7830, which says that the auditor shall file a transcript if a transcript exists. So the very next statute in sequence, which made me think maybe a transcript in 7829 is a sort of a more abstracted transcript. Maybe it's not a verbatim transcript. I don't really know. But this sort of gets into this idea that is the relief that you're envisioning. If we were to remand directly to the Board of County Commissioners, what would we tell them? What standard, what rule would we invoke to sort of say, this is what you need to do to correct the error, based upon what?
Sure. So SDCL 11213 is what empowers zoning boards and counties to pass zoning ordinances. And they're to pass them for the safety and general welfare of the people there. There may be reasons the board can articulate that would support that. But I think there's a real problem here in light of the statement made by Commissioner Ciampa, because if you'll remember from the Troy Township case, the Troy Township, all of the three townships, if my recollection is correct, came to the conclusion that the roads that they were seeking to vacate no longer served a public purpose and that it wasn't worth spending money on continuing to do that. Troy Township came to that conclusion, and that was the only conclusion under their ordinances it was required to come to make that determination. Nonetheless, based on one of the, I believe it was the chairman's statement, and again, too, like this case, the chairman's statement did not come in via the chairman. Two individuals came to the circuit court, where I believe, it was the testimony of two other individuals about what the chairman said, which is what the court ultimately decided on.
I think only Mr. Barron, but in any event.
In any event, the statement from Commissioner Ciampa that his decision was based on what he believed an old friend of his may have wanted with the land, I think there's a real problem in terms of, I mean, to the ultimate question, what do we tell them to do? Certainly that would be one of them. You can't consider personal motives. You can't consider these things that are untethered to the data that you've been presented about whether or not there's density things met, environmental concerns.
Don't be arbitrary. But they already know that.
So you had three commissioners that it seems to follow from what you're arguing, though, that we have three commissioners who vote no, and they may have three completely separate reasons, each of them legitimate, for voting no. They may not be in unanimity about their reasoning. And so we have to have on the record the legitimate reason of each of the three commissioners? If two don't say anything and one says something and it's wrong, it's an invalid decision? Or one answers and it's an acceptable reason, now it's good?
Sure. So that was one of the things that I think Judge Kanoff grappled with was, and I think Justice Salter, you mentioned it too, if there's nothing for us to review, do we have to find it's arbitrary or do we have to find that it's not arbitrary? And I think that goes back to the issue of why 7829 should be construed to require these transcripts. But to your question about, you know, is it a function of the fact that this was a 3-2 vote and we just so happen to have one of the threes making this statement that seems arbitrary? I don't. Maybe the argument's different under different circumstances. Certainly here, though, we have a deciding vote making his determination based on something that's wholly untethered from what the legislature intended these commissioners to review.
When Emrose appealed, it faced the exact same situation that it would face if we reverse, which it seems like you agree we need to. It faces the same situation, a paucity of information that it believes exists to explain what the Board of Commissioners did. It had the opportunity at that initial point that it appealed, it had that opportunity to develop the arguments that it thought would support its view of arbitrariness. How is it fair to give them another opportunity to develop the arguments of arbitrariness that they already had an opportunity to develop and that the rules would seem to contemplate in terms of allocation of burden belongs to them?
Sure. So I think, you know, ultimately, I don't think either party did any favors to the court in terms of framing how it was supposed to look at this testimony, either before or after. There's pretrial briefings. I know for certain the counties refers to a de novo review. It also refers to an abuse of discretion. That's kind of the pattern with a lot of the county's arguments, is that it will refer to the de novo review. It'll talk about it as being reviewed, you know, anew. And then it will cite those sort of more recent cases about the arbitrariness standard without ever explaining to the court why it is that it's not obvious to me reading through the briefs, and I don't think it would be obvious to just a judge reading this and gleaning the information from it, what the appropriate standard was.
So to reiterate that question, so how is it fair to give your client another bite at the apple on remand?
Well, in terms of if the court does not...
So if it's reversed and remanded, do you get... Mr. Parsons just asked for the petition to be denied.
Well, quite frankly, I think at this point, again, their only record evidence is regarding the arbitrariness. The county never offered any sort of testimony to support its argument. They've taken the position that it's the petitioner's burden, and they didn't take the testimony of the commissioners themselves, and so how can we make any determination?
Well, it is the petitioner's burden, though. You're not disputing that.
Not at all. But we have testimony from an individual who learned from one of the commissioners himself that he made the determination based on something that has nothing to do with any of the application criteria, that this now deceased former owner of the land wouldn't want to see it get developed, is an arbitrary decision. There's nothing in the record to support an actual legitimate decision from the board. Again, all of these arguments about how the decision does comport with the comprehensive plan, there's no actual evidence of that being the reason. It's all argument from counsel.
So ordinarily in this situation where the trial court hasn't actually reached an issue, we would reverse, we'd remand, and we'd say reach that issue. It seems like the prudent way to do it. Mr. Parsons suggests you have everything that you need. You can just do it on your own. You can do it right now. You don't have to remand it. Tell me why I shouldn't take that approach.
Well, I agree with the court that it would seem prudent in this case, given the way that Judge Kanoff ultimately ruled, to give him the opportunity, having been the fact finder, having himself heard the evidence and been able to weigh it at the hearing, And whether the court wants to order a full rehearing or whether the court wants to order that he simply reconsider the record in front of him on the appropriate standard, I tend to agree with you, Justice Myron, that based on the arguments from both the parties, it's not obvious that the circuit court considered any of the testimony whatsoever. I mean, the decision is based upon essentially this mistaken construing of the ordinances and the comprehensive plan and this determination that really what the board was acting in was a ministerial position. That's not true, but it's not obvious that Judge Kanoff would have said this isn't arbitrary if he had known that that was really the appropriate standard. And to say that he ruled on the appropriate standard, I mean, even the county's conclusions of law start with, number one, this is a de novo hearing. And then it goes, number two, the standard is abuse of discretion. What is Judge Kanoff supposed to do with that, particularly in light of testimony? I mean, the developer certainly put on evidence about the arbitrariness. It's just not clear whether Judge Kanoff thought that mattered
at all. What was the evidence from Mr. Schumacher?
Excuse me, but I was referring sort of the appellee as the developer generally, but Mr. Schumacher's testimony regarding
arbitrariness was... Right, collectively, I gotcha.
Yeah, but really all his comes down to is that he was denied any sort of explanation.
Is there other evidence... There's the information about Mr. Ciampa, which it looks clear to me the court says, what I'm going to do is I'm going to allow the testimony to take place. I'm going to make a decision whether I'm going to consider it, and the decision is one made by an individual or representative capacity under 801.2, which is the exclusion for party opponents' admissions. But it doesn't look like he ruled then, certainly didn't rule later. Besides that loose end, is there other evidence that bears upon the arbitrariness determination?
Not
I know Mr. Schumacher thought it was a very good idea, thought it was a sound plan,
sure.
But I don't know if that, does that move the meter in terms of arbitrariness?
Well, you know, Mr. Schumacher testified to having followed all of the things that he needed to follow in terms of talking to the relevant agencies, doing the sort of testing, getting civil engineers involved. So that's the sort of relevant data that the Troy Township talks about as needing to be considered. There's no evidence in the record that the court or that the board considered any of that. The only record evidence is that one of the commissioners, a deciding vote, based his decision upon the former owner's wishes. So that reason, we would ask that the court remand to the board directly for rehearing on the arbitrariness standard or alternatively remand to the circuit court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hurd. Mr. Parsons, you can proceed with rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think it's a good question. Should a board, every time they issue a decision, have to say, these are our reasons for doing this decision? When you think of the thousands of decisions that each board makes, not knowing which ones are going to end up at the South Dakota Supreme Court and which ones never will. And I think that's an incredible burden to try to put on a governing body where decisions are made by a vote. It's really like trying to ask Congress, why didn't you pass this law? Well, there are 435 reasons maybe why we didn't pass this law. And there may be 7 or 5 or 12 different reasons why the board collectively didn't do this. But what is important is they only collectively act to grant or deny it. And so there is no burden put by the legislature on boards to do this. To set forth findings of fact for every decision they make. And I would suggest it be unwise for this court to place a burden like that on all of our local boards. Because when you have to come forward to prove that something is arbitrary and unreasonable, I mean, it has to be based on more than just a feeling, hey, this isn't right, I was wronged, I should have got what I wanted. There has to be some evidence that they acted improperly or acted without justification. And if you don't have that evidence, then the presumption is that the board acted properly and with integrity. And that's how our system works. We trust our boards, our agencies, our local governing boards to make these legislative decisions.
So you're saying really the remedy here isn't to come in front of the court and challenge these decisions. It's go vote in the next commission election, and if you don't like the way they're voting, vote them out.
If there's no evidence that something was arbitrary or unreasonable, then it's not, I'm going to go to court and force the democratically elected board to change the decision they made. The board can change, as I've said before. Plans can change. Minds can be changed. This plan could be revised. They can come back to the board with a different plan that might be acceptable, that might get one more vote. That's the remedy here in our democratically our democratic process, where the legislative branches make these decisions. I wanted to comment on the my friend's discussion of the Troy Township case. There is language in there that says that the board or agency has to be able to articulate a satisfactory explanation. My reading of that is that that's when a decision is challenged. When a decision is challenged, a board obviously has to be able to articulate a satisfactory explanation. And I would suggest State's Attorney Hoffman did that very well at the hearing before the judge and in her briefing. The decision was based on the comprehensive plan and the ordinances adopted by the people of Turner County that specifically state that our agricultural lands are poor neighbors to residential development because of density concerns and all these other concerns. Agriculture is our number one priority. And they further state that Swan Lake is such a precious, limited resource in Turner County, basically our only lake, that any additional development around that must be considered extremely carefully, cautiously. That's right in the ordinances. That's what this board did and decided the congestion levels at this point, the ordinances advise against it. We're not going to change our ordinances to accommodate additional congestion around the lake. That's a satisfactory explanation that was articulated by the state's attorney when this was challenged. And so I would suggest there's no basis to reverse it.
So if MROSE is confounded by the denial, or anybody is, they're disappointed with what they perceive to be a lack of reasons or justification, what do they do in order to illuminate and satisfy, at least in their own minds, that the fix was not in?
Well, one thing I've seen developers and others do is record the proceedings themselves and ask questions. This court has seen transcripts provided by the proponents of petitions or things that were defeated, and they could have recorded it themselves and asked questions of the board and received whatever answers they'd wanted to do. That's one method.
There was a question asked of the board at the end. Why'd you deny this? And said, "We'll have to tell you."
I believe that was after after the hearing had concluded in the hallway or something like that. Is my understanding?
Assume the same answer had been on the party recorded transcript, and they had during the hearing said, "What's your reason?" And the board says, "We don't have to give you one."
Well, I think that's
a different situation, isn't it?
It's a different situation, but I still think it'd be an entirely accurate response if there are several different reasons.
But then it begs Justice Salter's question, which is, how does a dissatisfied party meet its burden to establish that this was not an arbitrary decision?
Well, you can't establish something that without evidence. And if there's no evidence that it was, then there's no case.
Well, that's why I wondered if maybe, is it possible then that one option, maybe it's the only option, I don't know if it is or it isn't, but one option that the rules seem to envision is that a developer like MROSE could use an administrative appeal under Chapter 7-8 to develop this sort of information. And let's say in a case sort of like this one, the county commission wasn't particularly forthcoming. There's not a lot there. It seems like that might counsel in favor of a more robust record and maybe some greater flexibility to develop information about what was really going on with the policymakers. Is that an option?
Well, it's an option in the future, I think, for the Turner County Board, if this would ever come back for them. I think you probably will see some
more. Speaking more generally and broadly about sort of the mine run of cases like this.
I don't think it's this court's role to impose legal requirements that aren't in the law.
But could somebody who's disgruntled use that administrative appeal for which they bear the burden, could they use that to develop that information that wasn't present at the commission meeting?
Well, yes, they have certainly had the opportunity to do that with the evidentiary hearing before the court, and whatever evidence they can gather and put on, that will be considered by the court at the hearing. Bringing the petition allows them to do that.
We've got some cases, and again, they're in the certiorari context, that talk about, but you can't get into the mind of the decision maker in that context of
right.
those cases, and so you can't put the commissioner on the stand and say, well, tell us now. So really, you've got to get that back at the time and ask the commission, tell us your reasons for denying it, and they state their reasons, and you're done at that point. Agreed?
If there's a satisfactory right. explanation that's been articulated, that's not an abuse of discretion, that's not something that violates the law otherwise, yes. I mean, that's how otherwise every single decision that's controversial becomes a court case.
You suggested earlier that the state's attorney had provided that explanation at the hearing before the judge, and you'll have to just help me with the record here. Was that in her argument or?
In the briefing before the judge. There's briefing, and then I think there's some argument at the hearing as well, but the parties briefed it, and that's where the explanations were put forward, the ordinances.
So going back to the Chief Justice's question then, or the reference was that you can't call the commissioners, but then the county commission gets to make its argument before the court about its valid reason. How does the appellant ever, or the disgruntled party ever have the access to the record?
I think it's not a question of access to the record. I just think it's kind of the abuse of discretion standard. If there's any reasonable basis to explain something, then it's not arbitrary. And so if you can put forward a reasonable basis to explain it, then it's not arbitrary, I think. And I think as a matter of law, this remark that was made under circumstances where a customer who was in favor of this was pressuring his plumber, why'd you do this? And he said, well, he's just trying to get out of the conversation is the way I read that. Even if you credit that and say it's not hearsay, as a matter of law, that's not evidence that this was an arbitrary decision. And if you throw his vote out, the ordinance still failed. 2-2.
You know, in some cases we see at the end of the hearing the board making or staff making a summary disposition saying this is why the board has done this, and it sure makes an easier record to review.
If I'm a state's attorney or a city attorney and there I've got that right in front of me, I might put that, whisper in the board's ear, maybe you ought to put that on the record in some cases, but one never knows when you're going to end up at the Supreme Court, and to have these immense burdens placed on every decision, every vote that's made, I think would be unreasonable. We ask that you reverse, Your Honor, with instructions to deny the petition.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments and briefing today. We'll be in recess for 10 minutes.